content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jen Rogers from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Smithsonian Magazine, the magazine of the Smithsonian Institute. Today's program is underwritten with the generous support of Carl and Pat Keppen. We wish to thank them for their support. On today's program, we'll begin with an article titled The History Thief by Travis McDade. Precious maps, books, and artworks vanished from a Pittsburgh library for nearly 25 years, but the caper's final chapter was written this past summer. Like nuclear power plants and sensitive computer networks, the safest rare book collections are protected by what is known as defense in depth, a series of small overlapping measures designed to thwart a thief who might be able to overcome a single deterrent. The Oliver Room, home to the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh's rare books and archives, was something close to the platonic ideal of this concept. Greg Piori, manager of the room starting in 1992, designed it that way. The room has a single point of entry, and only a few people had keys to it. When anyone, employee or patron, entered the collection, Piori wanted to know. The room had limited daytime hours, and all guests were required to sign in and leave personal items like jackets and bags in a locker outside. Activity in the room was under constant camera surveillance. In addition, the Oliver Room had Piori himself. His desk sat at a spot that commanded the room and the table where patrons worked. When a patron returned a book, he checked that it was still intact. Security for special collections simply does not get much better than that of the Oliver Room. In the spring of 2017, then, the library's administration was surprised to find that many of the room's holdings were gone. It wasn't just that a few items were missing. It was the most extensive theft from an American library in at least a century, the value of the stolen objects estimated to be $8 million. There are two types of people who frequent special collections that are open to the public. Scholars who want to study something in particular, and others who just want to see something interesting. Both groups are often drawn to incunables, books printed at the dawn of the European movable type, between 1450 and 1500. Incunables are old, rare, and historically important. In short, an incunable is so valued, and usually such a prominent holding, that any thief who wanted to avoid detection would not steal one. The Oliver Room thief stole 10. Visitors and researchers alike love old maps, and few are more impressive than those of Theatrum Orbis Terrarum, commonly known as the Bleyu Atlas, the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh's version, printed in 1644, originally comprised three volumes containing 276 hand-colored lithographs that mapped the known world in the age of European exploration. All 276 maps were missing. Many of the library's holdings had been donated over the years by the founder, Andrew Carnegie, and his friends. But in one notable instance, the library allotted money specifically to purchase 40 volumes of photogravure prints of Native Americans created by Edward Curtis in the first decades of the 20th century. The images were beautiful, historically valuable, and extremely rare. Only 272 sets were created. In 2012, Christie's sold one set for $2.8 million. The Carnegie Library set held some 1,500 photogravure plates, illustrations made apart from a book and illustrated into it. They had all been cut and removed from their bindings, except a few scattered throughout of unremarkable subjects, a book expert later noted. And this was just the beginning. The person who worked over the Oliver Room stole nearly everything of significant monetary value, sparing no country or century or subject. He took the oldest book in the collection, a collection of sermons printed in 1473, and also the most recognizable book, a first edition of Isaac Newton's Principia Mathematica. He stole a first edition of The Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith, A letter written by William Jennings Bryan and a rare copy of Elizabeth Cady Stanton's 1898 memoir, 80 Years and More, Reminiscences, 1815 to 1897. He stole a first edition of a book written by the nation's second president, John Adams, as well as a book signed by the third, Thomas Jefferson. He stole the first edition of Giovanni Boccaccio's Decameron, printed in London in 1620, and the first edition of George Eliot's Silas Marner, printed in the same city 241 years later. From John James Audubon's 1851 to 54 Quadrupeds of North America, he stole 108 of the 155 hand-colored lithographs. In short, he took nearly everything he could get his hands on, and he did it with impunity for close to 25 years. When a library finds that it has been the victim of a major theft, it can take a long time to determine what is missing, and an inspection of each shelved item and its pages is a laborious process. But the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh's rare and antiquarian collection had always been well documented, ever since the administration moved to establish an archive of the institution's rarest holdings. Greg Priori, who had graduated with a master's in European history a few years earlier from nearby Duquesne University, was then working in the library's Pennsylvania room, a space dedicated to local history and genealogy. He was also pursuing a library science degree at the University of Pittsburgh, with an emphasis on archives management. Both on paper and in person, he seemed like the perfect candidate to run the new archive, and was hired in 1991 to oversee what became the Oliver Room collection in 1992. Priori comes across as professional but easygoing, the sort of guy who knows a lot, but wears his knowledge lightly. Just under 6 feet tall, with a resonant voice and a prominent mustache, he was the son of a local obstetrician and spent the bulk of his life within walking distance of the Carnegie Library. An important job at a prestigious institution in his home city was something like a dream. After getting the job, he worked alongside a preservation specialist to assess the Carnegie Library's rare and antiquarian books. In addition, two rare book experts hired to offer conservation advice found that the library had given little thought to preserving its oldest books. So the staff blocked off windows to get control of the climate, substituted metal shelves for the old ones made of wood, which can leach acid into books, and upgraded the security system. In 1992, the room was officially renamed for William R. Oliver, a longtime benefactor. For years, it served as the jewel of the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh. Docents took patrons on tours, and C-SPAN said it was one of Western Pennsylvania's cultural high points. Scholars and journalists plumbed its archives. In the fall of 2016, library officials decided it was time to audit the collection again, and hired the Pall Mall art advisors to do the appraisal. Carrie Lee Jeffrey and Christiana Scavuzzo began their audit on April 3, 2017, a Monday, using the 1991 inventory as a guide. Within an hour, there was trouble. Jeffrey was looking for Thomas McKenney and James Halls's History of the Indian Tribes of North America. This landmark work included 120 hand-colored lithographs, the result of a project that began in 1821, with McKenney's attempt to document in full color the dress and spiritual practices of Native Americans who had visited Washington, D.C., to arrange treaties with the government. The three-volume set of folios, produced between 1836 and 1844, is large and gorgeous and would be a highlight in any collection. The Carnegie Library's version had been hidden on a top shelf at the end of a row. When Jeffrey discovered why, her stomach dropped. Once a plump book filled with plates, she would recall, the sides had caved in on themselves. All those stunning illustrations had been cut from the binding. The appraisers discovered that many of the invaluable books with illustrations or maps had been ransacked. John Ogilvie's America, one of the greatest illustrated English works about the New World, printed in London in 1671, had contained 51 plates and maps. They were gone. a copy of Ptolemy's groundbreaking La Geographica, Geographia, printed in 1548, had survived intact for over 400 years, but now all of its maps were missing. Of an 18-volume set of Giovanni Piranesi's extremely rare etchings, printed between 1748 and 1807, the assessors noted dryly, "The only part of this asset located during on-site inspection was its bindings. The contents have evidently been removed from the bindings, and the appraiser is taking the extraordinary assumption that they have been removed from the premises." The replacement value for the Piranesis alone was $600,000. Everywhere they looked, the auditors found a staggering degree of destruction and looting. They showed their results to the head of the preservation department, Jacqueline Mignogna. She, too, felt sick. After seeing historic volume after historic volume reduced to stubs, she went back to her office and wept. On April 7th, only 5 days after the appraisers had begun their inquiry, Jeffrey and Scavuzzo met with the library's director, Mary Frances Cooper, and two other administrators and detailed what they had already found, or rather not found. The next phase of their analysis would have a more pessimistic focus. Now they would try to determine just how far the collection's value had fallen. On April 11th, a Tuesday, Cooper had the lock to the Oliver Room changed. Greg Priori was not given a key. Just about the only thing that keeps an insider from stealing from special collections is conscience. Security measures may thwart outside thieves, but if someone wants to steal from the collection he stewards, there is little to stop him. Getting books and maps and lithographs out the door is not much harder than simply taking them from the shelves. While other cultural heritage thieves have gone to great lengths to avoid calling attention to their acts, stealing items of low value, destroying card catalog entries, ripping out book plates, bleaching library stamps from pages, Priori took the best stuff he could find and brazenly left the library stamps in, as the library would see when it began to regather the books. Despite this cavalier approach, he was astonishingly successful, more successful than any insider book thief in memory. Priori and his wife, who worked as a children's librarian, hardly had an opulent lifestyle. The couple lived in a modest apartment crowded with books, but they had four children who attended private schools, St. Edmund's Academy, the Ellis School, and Duquesne University. All indications suggest that he was perpetuating his crimes not to get rich, but rather, as he told police, merely to stay afloat. For example, in the fall of 2015, Priori wrote an email to the Ellis School asking for an extension on tuition payments. "I am trying to juggle tuition payments for four kids," he wrote. A few weeks later, he asked Duquesne officials to lift a hold on accounts assigned to two of his children, since he had made overdue tuition payments. In February 2016, Priori asked his landlord for an extension, falsely claiming his wife had missed work due to a heart attack. The rent was 4 months past due. Priori lived close enough to the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh that he could walk to work in 15 minutes. One route took him past the famous blue edifice of the Caliban Bookshop, one of the city's best-known cultural spots. The store was founded in 1991 by a Pittsburgher named John Schulman, who was 5'7" tall and stocky, with close-trimmed, thinning gray hair and often a graying goatee blending into a few days' growth of beard. Schulman started his book-selling business in the 1980s, working out of a Pittsburgh apartment. Gregarious and diligent, he acquired the sort of status that comes from years of reputable work in the profession. He was a member of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, ABAA, serving on its board of governors for the Mid-Atlantic chapter. He was also an appraiser for regional institutions, including the University of Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, and Penn State. After decades selling rare books, he was familiar to most in the business and even somewhat well-known outside of it. Thanks to appearances on Antiques Roadshow, he was PBS famous. For the most part, Shulman treated the books, maps, or prints that Priori brought him exactly as he would process the rare and antiquarian materials he got from any source. He would describe an individual book in ways people in the market would understand, and depending on the quality of the item listed on his website. But with the items Priori brought, there was an added step. When a book of value or importance is acquired by a library, the institution marks it using one of several different kinds of stamp: ink, emboss, or perforation. These marks, which state the name of the library, are meant to do two things: identify the rightful owner and destroy the value of the book for resale. Most major special collections, like the Oliver Room, also adhere a book plate to the inside front cover. To sell such a heavily marked book, a typical thief would have to tear, cut, and bleach away this evidence. If he was not careful, he would destroy in the process much of what made the book valuable in the first place. Shulman found another way to ready a stolen book for sale. Using materials he kept at his store, whenever he got a Carnegie book from Priori, here one of his employees pressed a small red stamp, bright as lipstick, on the bottom of the book plate. It pronounced the book withdrawn from library. That mark was to counteract the others. While there is a tradition of librarians and archivists stealing from collections that they are meant to steward, not since the 1930s had a dealer as highly reputed as Shulman been implicated. In the 1970s and 80s, a flamboyant Texas bookman and one-time president of ABAA, named John Jenkins, made money selling stolen and forged items to libraries and collectors. But most of his malfeasance was confined to Texas, and no one who knew Jenkins would have been surprised to discover he was an outlaw. He was an indebted gambler who had burned his own store for insurance money, and his life ended in 1989 with a gunshot to the head. Authorities differ whether it was a homicide or a suicide. Shulman, a constant presence at the major book fairs, seemed as rock solid as any bookseller in the business, all of which made him the perfect fence for Priori. The librarian could not risk approaching dealers or collectors directly with the types of books he was selling, and the internet would have exposed him the first time he tried to sell an incunable. Priori simply could not have operated without Shulman's help and good name, and Shulman could not have gained access to the Oliver Room's big-ticket items without Priori. Apparently, Greg Priori knew he was about to get caught 6 months before it happened. In the fall of 2016, when the library administration was discussing the possibility of an appraisal of the Oliver Room, which would necessarily uncover missing assets, he argued against it. But his colleagues chalked it up to his general obstinacy against having others in his domain, an obstinacy that one librarian noted had grown increasingly pronounced as the years ticked by. Still, with or without Priori's approval, the administration decided to go ahead with the assessment. Priori talked to Shulman about it, and the bookseller tried to help his supplier by emailing a number of possible explanations for why many items were missing. Some items might be out for repair alone, Shulman offered, urging Priori to create documents attesting to this. He also suggested saying that the library's former director, now dead, had talked about selling off some of the Oliver Room's better books, and that he might have done so while Priori was away on leave. And Shulman proposed emphasizing that the Oliver Room is fairly porous and accessible, and that there are no doubt have been multiple opportunities for many different staff and visitors to enter the rooms without proper protocol. For his part, Priori suggested that the room's defenses weren't perfect. When library administrators interviewed him on April 18, 2017, he told Cooper, the director, that he did leave catalogers, interns, and volunteers to work by themselves in the room. He added that maintenance workers, in particular some men who had done repairs to the roof, had access to the room. In the end, though, there was no way to hide his decades of crimes. Thousands of plates, maps, and photographs were missing. Clearly, this was not the work of a patron or workman who had joined a few minutes of unfettered access. Even if someone else had been stealing from the library, it would have been impossible for Priori not to notice so much missing. In April, he was suspended from his job, and in June he was fired. Pittsburgh police began a formal investigation in June, and on August 24th executed search warrants at Priori's home, a Caliban bookshop, and a Caliban warehouse. Police questioned Priori the same day. It didn't take long for him to come clean. When police went to the Caliban warehouse, they brought along Christiana Scavuso of Pall Mall Art Advisors. She found, among other items, 91 of the Edward Curtis prints and 7 maps from the Blau Atlas. Police also found the stamp that Shulman used to indicate that the books he sold had been deaccessioned from the library. Phil Claspie is twice a graduate of Case Western Reserve University, with a BA and an MA in English Literature, and today serves as head of special collections for the university's main library. Despite his love for the humanities, he knows it is the sciences that keeps the lights on at Case Western. That's why he was especially sad to surrender an important book of scientific history. In August 2018, he received an email from Lyle Graber, a detective in the Allegheny County District Attorney's Office in Pennsylvania, about a recently purchased book of early modern astronomy. While reviewing evidence in the case, Graber wrote, "It appears that in 2016 you purchased Questiones in Teorecas in Georgi Purabachi from Caliban Books. Unfortunately, it is very possible that this book is among those having been stolen from the Carnegie Library and sold to unsuspecting buyers such as yourself." Shulman's catalog descriptions noted the book's condition was very good with minor ex-library marks. Claspie retrieved the book from its shelf and saw what Shulman meant by ex-library marks. The first 2 pages had several stamps and an ash blue rectangular bookplate from the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh. Below the bookplate was a small set of red letters pronouncing the book withdrawn from library. Claspie carefully wrapped the book and sent it back to Pennsylvania. Around the same time, a private collector named Michael Kiesel also received an alarming letter. Kiesel had purchased one of the incunables that Priori had stolen and Shulman had sold to a reputable dealer in England. The dealer asked Kiesel to return the book to Detective Graber, which Kiesel did. Dozens of people, private collectors, librarians, and rare book dealers, received similar letters that August. "I sent the books and documents to Allegheny County, where they have become part of a small but extremely valuable library under the supervision of the district attorney." This past January, in an Allegheny County court, Priori pleaded guilty to theft and receiving stolen property, while Shulman pleaded guilty to receiving stolen property, theft by deception and forgery. The guidelines for such crimes recommend a standard sentence of 9 to 16 months incarceration, but include 2 other possibilities: an aggravated range of up to 25 months incarceration, and a mitigated range that could include probation. Much of what governs sentencing and property crimes comes down to the numbers. The Pall Mall Art Advisor spent months determining the replacement value for each item Priori had destroyed or stolen outright. The total, they concluded, was more than $8 million. But even this number, they said, was inadequate, since many of the items were irreplaceable, not available for purchase anywhere at any price. Claspie argued that the value of rare books, maps, and archival documents cannot be measured by money alone. "This crime was not just a crime against my library or the Carnegie Library. It was a cultural heritage crime against us all," he wrote to the judge. The director of the University of Pittsburgh's libraries, Cornelia Tankchiva, wrote that a rare book theft, especially from a public library, is an egregious crime against the integrity of the cultural record and against the public good. Further, the Pall Mall Art Advisors wondered what books might have been donated to the library in the future, benefiting the people of Pittsburgh, if Greg Priori had not devastated the library's reputation as well as its holdings. "The chilling effect on donors is one reason that many libraries, upon discovering losses from their collection, keep the matter quiet." More than 2 dozen people wrote letters asking the judge, Alexander Bickett, to impose strict sentences, not always a certainty in crimes involving thefts from a library. At an in-person sentencing on June 18th, where Priori apologized for his thefts, "I am deeply sorry for what I have done," he said. Several spoke about the terrible effects of these crimes. "We do not want an apology," Cooper told the judge. "Any apology from these thieves would be meaningless. They are only sorry that we discovered what they did." Still, Judge Bickett was not swayed. He sentenced Greg Priori to 3 years house arrest and 12 years probation. Shulman received 4 years house arrest and 12 years probation. Both Shulman and Priori, through representatives, declined to speak to Smithsonian. After the sentences were made public, Carol Kamen, a member of the board of the Carnegie Natural History Museum, wrote to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that supporters of local nonprofits were appalled at these unbelievably light sentences. Numerous booksellers have told me that they believe in Shulman's innocence, saying he was duped, a view the bookseller himself encouraged in an email to colleagues before sentencing, in which he insisted he pleaded guilty only to save legal costs and put the matter behind him. Others in the rare book world, though, say the evidence gathered by police was convincing. For instance, Shulman did not engage in legitimate business with the Carnegie Library over the years, and on those occasions when he purchased a book through proper channels, he wrote checks payable to the library. But when he bought books from Priori, he made the checks payable to Priori, or paid cash. It was Shulman's responsibility, as one bookseller told me, to notice there was something odd about the treasures Priori was handing over. The Ethics Code of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America states that members shall make all reasonable efforts to ascertain the materials offered to him or her are the property of the seller, and members shall make every effort to prevent the theft or distribution of stolen antiquarian books and related materials. Shulman was not only a member of the ABAA, he had served on its Ethics and Standards Committee. We've run out of time for today's episode of Smithsonian Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's programming is underwritten with the generous support of Carl and Pat Keppen. We wish to thank them for their support. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Smithsonian Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.